it won't be fully what we intended. But tonight, you're going to cover the emergency bag for the car, for pets and animals, which we've seen that, what's happened. We saw it in Japan, and we've seen it in the tornado-stricken cities, pets that have been left or abandoned or the owners transported somewhere. And there is a protocol for that, and if you, you know, it really just means just thinking through it early, thinking ahead, you know, ahead of time, and there's a little go bag for little pups, the kitties, and that's just easy to do. And then a little bit of things at the end, just heads up kind of things, random sort of a catch-all to think about. And I was going to finish that up tonight, and then next week we're going to hear Mike actually do a profound message again right around the Joel 2. He preached it in 2005, right after Hurricane Katrina. They had a they had a pre-scheduled conference the weekend after Katrina hit. Katrina made landfall on a Monday, and that following Thursday, that same week, was a conference in Kansas City. And we just know right when it was, because we were had taken Tim, moved him there, and we were on our way back and drove through the hurricane with Paul and Jenny. They picked us up actually in Nashville. We flew in there and picked us up, and we couldn't even see the highway. So we know right when that message was given. I remember it vividly, but Mike had been given the visitation. He doesn't readily just come to a microphone and start saying, I saw this, or did. I mean, he doesn't do it immediately. Sometimes he doesn't do it at all. Sometimes he just prays the visitation, and you don't know he even had it. But we're going to hear that next week, because that will prepare us going into Saturday, which is the response to the National Solemn Assembly. And I did see this afternoon that the governor of Maine has declared in that state a day of fasting and prayer for the nation. The governor of the state of Washington, who's a Democratic governor, has done the same. Nikki Haley, who's the governor of South Carolina, has called South Carolina to a day of prayer and fasting. Haley Barbour, I think, is planning to be there. Governor of Mississippi. The governor of Alabama is still weighing, but Bobby Jindal, the governor of Louisiana, is going. Senator Sam Brownback out of Kansas is going. So we're going to see some governors assemble. Don't yet know what it's going to exactly look like, because before the solemn assemblies have been ministerial people, have not really been civil servants and governmental officials. And this is going to go across a broad spectrum. It's going to go across a broad base of people in the church and out. And so I think that it's going to be very interesting. But I did want to just take maybe 10 minutes and cover or just talk about preparation and basically just open it up and throw it out there for those of you who've been in, around when we've been doing it. Some of you have been in some of them and not the others, and that's fine. We have extra notes. But as you thought about it or began to participate in some of that, or just from your wisdom in life, if you have thoughts to throw out or to contribute, I wanted you to take just a few minutes, and if something has just hit you through the preparation time, give an opportunity for you to voice that. And certainly it hasn't been comprehensive. I mean, there's people that spend a lifetime studying emergency preparation and doing it. And so mostly this has been to cause us to begin to think about being prepared on another level from what we in America have known in the past. Because if we recognize the weather patterns, we certainly have to be people of the day and recognize what the Spirit's saying. And so that's kind of what it's been. It's just a kind of a wake-up call and to begin to say, hey, we need to begin to think about doing some of these things. So I just wanted to throw that out. Has anybody got any comments or anything that you've done that you found that you want to share, or that you may not? Yeah, we'll pass the mic. So, Jimmy, let me give you the mic.
The mic. You're not being taped. Don't worry.
I just wanted to mention, I'm sure you've said this before, but I just wanted to say again that we exercise wisdom and maybe even caution in talking about some of the things we're doing, because you know, you just don't always know who's listening or who might misinterpret our desire to be ready. But medical emergency to help others and our families, especially if there was any monetary things you were keeping in the house. You know, people could hear, and it wouldn't be a good thing for them to know that you had it in an emergency, because they might want to steal it or cause you harm to get it. And I just thought I'd mention that, that we need to be cautious of how we deal with that, that it is for Jesus and not for greed or, you know, just to say it to the God, throwing pearls before swine where they would hurt you for it, because that's not our intent to gain wealth. It's to help, but others could misconstrue that. And I just thought I'd mention the wisdom of being cautious. I know as we shared with our children, you know, they're not exactly thrilled that we would give them anything for something awful happening. But we prayed and gave them just a little bit of info, and, you know, they received it well. But I know if I had said, you know, we think something's, they can't handle it right now.
Right.
And I just say caution and wisdom on how we say it and pray for the Lord to bring them up to discuss it at the right time.
Sammy couldn't handle 5 days without the power.
Yes, Sammy. Yes, she can. She just, you just think she can.
She is the power.
She is the power.
You bit me. She didn't turn it on.
And I was just thinking about when I was in London in the 70s, and a huge tornado hit that whole city, and it was the day of the 300 tornadoes in the nation. The thing that is overwhelming to me, the lack of water, of course, the electricity puts everything out, and it's dark, it becomes dirty very quickly. But the water, especially in terms of sanitation, took us out of those seminary dorms. I mean, it took us out. If we'd had food, whatever. But that's a very big question, you know, in my mind. Well, you could have the water stored, and whatever, but if you do not have sanitation and the city up and empowered to do sanitation, then, well, guess what?
You better have a show.
Yes.
It's what?
That's exactly right. We don't think about those kinds of things, but one of the things that people that work in emergency preparedness do, and they do it so well, they go by category. And I heard a man one time say, what I did in preparing this, you know, outline that he used, which was excellent, he said, I just went through the day and I thought about what I had to do. You know, we don't think about it. So most of what we do is really routine and just in life. I mean, you take a bath, you don't even think about it. Get in there, you take a bath, get out, drive, you go. You know, you go into the bathroom, you use it, you know, you go. I mean, we don't think about all that, but if we think through the activities of daily living and what's required, if you don't have, like, just think about those activities. If you didn't have heating and cooling, water that flows, you know, if you don't have water that flows, then you don't have sanitation. You don't have electricity, you've got a challenge for heating and cooling, and you've got a challenge for cooking and refrigeration and washing clothes and washing people, you know, and drink. I mean, if we just think through the activities of daily living, then we have, we've solved a lot of the issues. I mean, we've at least considered it. And a huge percentage, at least initially, when you're in a disaster of any kind, is if you can remove the shock effect, you are way ahead of the average person beside you, around you. Just the shock effect that it can even happen, that puts you in a way different place than the average citizen, because most Americans have not even thought about it. They don't want to think. They're afraid to think about it. And the images that are coming, you know, in America, we think, well, that happened in Haiti. That happened in Japan. They're sitting on a volcano. That happened, you know. But the reality is, it can happen anywhere at any time. And it can be defined by who knows what. And so if we can take away that element of shock, although we would still be in shock, no doubt, but it would not, we're ahead of the game if we've at least thought about it. Whereas if we just don't think about it, put it off, that doesn't help anybody. It just puts you kind of at the mercy of whatever rolls down the pike. So that's been the goal. And we'll do one more installation of it, and then we'll take a break and go back to where.
Are there still more, are open for more comments?
Yeah, comments, anybody have comments?
I was just thinking about when we were involved with Hurricane Ivan, it became clear that the people that you associate with are your neighbors, because you can't drive anywhere. You couldn't, the roads weren't open, and even if they were, there wasn't any gas.
That's right.
And so it might be prudent to start praying to get to know your neighbors, whether they're believers or not. You know, that's an opportunity. But it was very eye-opening when we went through 9 days without electricity, and it was like probably 95 degrees and 95% humidity, and everyone helped each other. It was pretty amazing. But there's great opportunity for Jesus to be shared in that time, and we want her to start now.
That's right. You're absolutely right about that. Anybody else? Words of wisdom?
Well, I've got too much.
Want to say something?
Well,
say it on there so people.
Yeah. The biggest thing is I feel like we don't realize when we lose power, we lose everything.
That's right.
And when you lose power, we've talked about water, we've talked about food and everything, but the biggest thing is it's such chaos.
Yes.
We need to stay out of chaos.
Yes.
And I feel like basically, you know, I think everybody here knows that they need to have water. If you don't have water, you know. And where I'm at down there, y'all can come and we'll get water. Now, whether you want to drink it or not, we'll have water.
We'll filter it.
but the biggest thing is I just caution you, water is the key.
It is the key.
And we see it all the time.
Yeah.
If we lose power, we don't have water. Yeah. We care.
So. People realize that your pumps are run by electric, mm-hmm. electricity. They scare your pumps, so you can see the light, but and flush your toilet. You don't have to drink the water. You know, it's just a little thing you just
don't think about.
You don't think about it.
Right.
You need them.
And I did can 87 quarts, please.
Oh my God!
Oh, wow. That's a lot of beans.
Hey, we know where to go.
Christine,
I've been hunting beans.
We've been hunting beans. Now we know where to go. It was sitting here all along.
Like this kind of heat, the grabbing of that in cars would make what effect would that have on those medications?
Well,
even like things like chemical emotions. Anything like that.
Anything like that. Yeah. If there's a question, medications are, if you package those separately, like in those bags, like the Ziploc bags like I showed you last week, you can take those out and just set them aside. Or you keep them in your car and figure, you know, I'll replace them after this is over. You're talking about a small bottle of Tylenol, a small bottle of, you know, ibuprofen. A little bit of this and a little bit of that. You're not talking about a whole lot of money. Now, prescription drugs, that's a different story. It's a fortune. I'm thinking of Jim, you know, and different ones of us that have real heart medications or whatever, the cost involved there, that would be different. But heat, cold doesn't bother much of anything. Medication wise, you're going to be okay, but heat can. And you just it's just one of those things. It will vary from summer to summer. It'll vary. I mean, we hadn't had this kind of heat like this in a long time.
So it will vary, but you just sort of have to use your judgment on that. And after that hot summer, you live in your car, you may want, you know, come the fall when it cools off, you may want to just go with your bicycle. But you can. He does affect it. It does. But it's not going to completely, it wouldn't be useless. But what it'll do is it'll decrease the lifespan of it. Whereas it might expire in 5 years, you would think maybe a year. That's what I would think. But who's to know? It would still be effective. Benadryl spray would still be effective. You know, it may not be as effective in a year or two from being in 90 or 100 degree heat. And certainly drought where Jonathan is in Lubbock, Texas, it's 116 degrees. Now for 10 days running, you know, after you've been set something, hydrocortisone cream in 110 degree heat times 30 days, you might have to toss it in 3 months or something and just replace it. But you're not talking about a fortune, you're talking about a small amount of money. So you just have to sort of use your judgment on that, really, and look at it. But just remember, heat will cause decomposition, but cold really doesn't very much. Cold is, unless it actually freezes, and it's probably not going to. Anybody else?
One thing I don't know if it was discussed or not, but root celery is a great way to preserve food, but also medications. If you could just bury something that's insulated, I know, and we used to have an old freezer that we buried in the garden, and we kept our root crops in there, but medications would work too. It kind of is a consistent temperature.
So do you carry your grab-and-go bag when you call all the
time? I've gone back and forth. Really, we should have one in the car and one at home. Yeah, because if you're somewhere, just think about that.
You're
at work. People were at work on the day the tsunami hit. They were on the, you know, you just don't know where you're going. In the ideal circumstance, you know, you'd be at home, you could get your grab-and-go bag, you could go wherever you needed or stay wherever you needed. The recommendation is one at work, an emergency pack at work, one in the vehicle, and one at your place of residence. And you just sort of have to, it's hard to do, but if you put something in the backpack and just stick it in the trunk of your car, it's better to have it than not have it. And then you just have to go through it, you know, every year or 6 months and kind of, just like you do your medicine cabinet, toss up and refill it. And if you've had a big season where the heat's gone, heat's cooked everything, then you just toss it and start over. It's the nature of where we are right now. And there's no way around that if you're going to keep it in your car. But, I mean, what good is it if you're in your car and your bag's at home?
It's not helping at all.
So really you need something in your car, and it's just, you have to make that decision, you know, what you're going to put in there. Anybody else?
So yeah, we've structured this, and we felt like the Lord said when we started doing this early this year, 90% spiritual preparation and 10% physical. And we want to maintain that, you know, individually, and even that's one of the reasons when we had Matthew do the Bride of Christ, that's part of the spiritual preparation, that understanding, that's what gets us through when these things happen, because we understand what's ahead. And then the other thing is community, that, you know, God's bringing us together. As we prepare, is tightening the knitting of us together as a community. And when these things happen, you know, we're already basically a unit. And mutual support, mutual help, internally and externally to our neighbors and whatever. And the final thing is this idea of knowing that, it's going to be important for us to develop a way to communicate amongst ourselves in those crises.
Which we're working on.
Right.
And just as you were saying that, the word brought back to my mind. Late in the fall, we were having some work done in the bathroom, and I called the man that's done our, he's been our electrician guy that's come done various little things for us over time, and I've always really loved Wendell because he's got such a kind spirit, and he's really good electrician, and he just comes in and does his work. And anyway, he was over there and he was replacing some stuff and putting a vent fan in our bathroom in the ceiling because it didn't have one. He was taking out my wall here, closing that off and putting the vent fan in. And I had the prayer room going in the family room, just playing in there. And he came up the stairs and he said, "What's that? What's that playing? What's that music?" He said, "That's amazing music." And of course, it was a Worship with the Word set, and they were singing through the Song of Solomon, I think. But anyway, he was just drawn to it. And so I explained to him, it's just it's a 24-hour sanctuary, worship and intercession going on, you know, in the center of the nation now for 12 years, and he couldn't believe it. And he began to tell me, he said, "I am a Free Will Baptist pastor." Free Will Baptist pastor. And he said, "I have a question for you." And I said, "Sure, well, what is it?" And he said, "Do you sense that something's about to happen in our nation?" I mean, and I said, "Well, yeah, something is." He said, "I mean, no, it's not good." And I said, "Yep, you're right." And he said, "Well," he said, "I can't say this." He said, "You know, I work, this is my job, and I pastor, and then pastor this little church," and he told me where it was. And he's like, "You know, it's a little congregation that we sweep people, and we just," he said, "I've just been trying to kind of bring them along." But he said, "I've been storing food for 2.5 years in a unit out behind the church, and nobody in the church knows it." Because he said they would absolutely flip out. He said they'd just flip out, you know. Because he said, first of all, they all think that the rapture's going to come, and they're all going to be taken out, and there's nothing going to bad happen to anybody. And he said, "I've not taken that on yet." He said, "That's on the agenda," but he said, "The reality is, I think that something is going to happen," and we talked about that, and at the end of the conversation, I said, "Wendell, here's the deal. I know right where you are, and I know how to get over the side of this mountain and walk to where you are, and you know where I am, and you know what is going on here." And I said, "It's important that the real people of the Lord know where each other is. And God has that, and we don't even know where that all the people are. Lots of people. But he knows where they are, and he knows how to alert us and let us know when those people come before us and we need to share with, rather than just randomly sharing with everybody, you know, about food or whatever. Not that you would share your food with anybody, because we would. But we don't want to just put that out there necessarily." And so I thought that was interesting, because I really knew that day, it was one of those times where, you know, this was an appointment, because he and I had never had that discussion before, and he brought it up, and it was based on hearing the intercession coming out of the prayer room, and just what he could hear the singer singing. So he was singing the Word of God, you know, and he said, "I just know," he said, I can read the weather patterns. And he said, "Storms on the horizon." And I said, "You're right, Wendell, it is." And he said, "You know, what are we going to do when all we've got is what we've got?" And I said, "Well, we're going to use what we've got, and then we'll multiply food.
There you go.
That's what we're going to do. We're going to do what we can, and then we're going to do, then Jesus is going to help us." And he said, "Well, that makes me happy." So we're good. But I believe that there's people like that dotted all around our lives. You know, it may be at your workplace, it may be in your neighborhood, it may be just somebody random that you see, and God, I mean, this electrician I've known for years, and he's been in and out of our house and done various projects, but we never had a conversation like that. And he's really true blue. I mean, there's no question about where he stands. And so I know it's the Lord, you know. And I said, "So Wendell, not only do I need to know, I know where the church is, I need to know where you live." So he told me where he lived, and I said, "You know where we are, and you know how to get here." And so that's what you do, you know, and when God brings us people across your pathway. And Christine and I had an experience this week, and we may just have been in a place where, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
We were in a place that, well,
yep,
in the hills of Virginia that you just about couldn't get there except you walked there.
That's right.
And we said, what happened when the power goes out, and the person said, it did go out, and we survived fine for days and days and days and days right here. And there wasn't, I mean, there's nobody within miles. I said, whoa, this would be one of the last places anybody come. Mm-hmm. And she said, you're right. Mm-hmm. But as we're winding down, I wanted to throw one more thing out, and then we're going to hear a quick video from the response, get right to the prayer meeting. Hopefully quickly here at 9 o'clock, and we'll go to 10:15 tonight, just so that we can spend some time actually praying. This week, we were talking about on Tuesday, the crisis that we're in, and you know, if you're listening to the news at all, it's everywhere, the financial disaster, you know, that's looming at the country, and we feel it. I mean, we're all feeling it, we're watching it happen, and I was just sitting here, and I felt like the Lord said that day, you know, we need to focus. I'm just saying, God, come by your Spirit and give us real perspective. And as I did that, I mean, he just highlighted to me Jerusalem. And on that day, it was July 25th, I had, or was it the 26th? It was Tuesday, whatever day that was. There was a meeting going on at the UN. On that afternoon, there was a meeting going on. Of course, all the hubbub was around Washington, all the this and that plan. And they're all in confusion. They're like dogs chasing their tails. And they're in stupor. Doesn't matter which side of the aisle they are. Doesn't matter who's talking. Round and round they go, round and round they go. And it's the same song, second verse, and it's just stuporish. And so I'm thinking about that, and this sort of, and the Lord just dropped on me. There was a meeting that day, in the afternoon at the United Nations. And the topic was the establishment of Palestinian state and the division of the city of Jerusalem at the UN. And we were present as a nation. Netanyahu had been here, and he said, there's going to be a surprise meeting before September, which is the designated meeting for that. And he said, I'm looking for a surprise meeting, which this fulfilled it. And the surprise meeting was to discuss, we think you need to divide Jerusalem. And the Lord just quickened to me, Joel chapter 3, he said, I will gather all the nations, or this is at the end, bring them down to the valley of Jehoshaphat, just outside of Jerusalem, and I will enter into judgment with them there on behalf of my people and my inheritance, Israel, whom they have scattered among the nations. And they have divided up my land and cast lots for my people. Of course, we know God said, I'll make Jerusalem a burdensome stone. And so as that was all going on, I just felt like, you know, in Joel chapter 2 and chapter 1, the first wave came, and it was the economic crisis. It was the locusts, the hopping locusts, the gnawing locusts, the whatever locusts, and they came. And of course, it was agricultural, and it devastated the crops, which was their finances, and it just like devastated the land. And the economic hit, and it was because God was entering into you know, judgment with the people. And then a few years passed, and then it was the military invasion, because they did not turn, they did not repent, they did not cry out as a result of the economic threat and the economic crisis. And the Lord was just saying, you know what, I mean, we're all about this economic thing, and it is, I mean, we're on a precipice, there's no doubt, but that's just the symptom. The cause is a completely different issue. And the cause wasn't in Washington, the cause was in New York. And as we're dealing the souls of his people and dealing with his land, his city, Paul the Bride, we're dealing, and he said, if you do that, you know, that's a bad day in the neighborhood. And so, I mean, it just felt like the economic shaking is not just an economic shaking. It's tied to governmental, I just want to say stupidity. It's tied to governmental rebellion, where we are lifting up a governmental fist against the land, his land, and his people. And I want to read Jeremiah real quick, chapter 25, From the 13th year of Josiah, the son of Ammon, king of Judah, even to this day, these 23 years, the word of the Lord has come to me, and I have spoken to you again and again, but you have not listened. And the Lord has sent to you all his servants, the prophets, again and again, but you have not listened or inclined your ears, saying, turn now everyone from his evil way and from the evil of your deeds, and dwell in the land which the Lord has given to you and your forefathers forever and ever, and do not go after other gods to serve them and to worship them, and do not provoke me to anger with the work of your hands, and I will do you no harm. Yet you have not listened to me, declares the Lord, in order that you might provoke me to anger with the work of your hands to your own harm. Therefore, thus says the Lord of hosts, because you have not obeyed my words, behold, I will send and take all the families of the north, declares the Lord, and I will send to Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, my servant. Nebuchadnezzar is his servant, and will bring them against this land and against its inhabitants and against all these nations round about, and I will utterly destroy them and make them a horror and a hissing and an everlasting desolation. Moreover, I will take from them the voice of the joy and the voice of gladness, the voice of the bridegroom and the voice of the bride, the sound of the millstones and the light of the lamp. And this land will be desolate for 70 years. And so here we stand. You know, I mean, God is, that's the account of what he did to his own people in the city of Jerusalem. He took a demonized king, evil king, he deputized him as his servant, and he sent him down to take these people into captivity. And I'm looking at that and I'm saying, God, help us. You know, we're not adding it up in any way. Our lawmakers are dealing, you know, on it's nuts. And when you see them going around on both sides of the aisle, and it's just stupor, and nothing they say makes any sense at all. We know that there's a spirit involved. And so that's just what. And then I share on Tuesdays with Linda and maybe a couple of you that, I don't know if you saw the report out of Norway, but this is interesting as well. You know, of course, this tragedy thing that happened last week. And we were coming to the prayer room as we were hearing the news out of Oslo. And as I heard the word Oslo, I thought immediately of the Oslo Accords, where the peace, the halfway to peace was done there in Oslo. And it wasn't long that Sadat was murdered and the remaining was shot. And we've had round two at Camp David, and on we go. And it's interesting, it's all around his people and his land. But this horrible thing that happened last Friday, and that just sort of got my mind, the Oslo Accords, and I'm thinking, the Oslo Accords. And I wanted to get back to my computer and sort of look it up, and as I perused through there on Saturday, I found a shocking news account. I couldn't believe it, and then I kept looking, and I kept looking, and it kept being verified. And what I found was that on that island, those children, 13 and 18, on Wednesday, before the Friday shooting, they were, the foreign minister of Norway had been to that island to speak to them, and the prime minister had either gone or was going. I mean, these are, what kind of young adults are these that the governmental leaders were going to the island. And I found a photograph of these children, and it was a banner, one on one end, you know, and one on the other, like you see people walking down a banner in a parade. It was that big, and it said, Boycott Israel. And these youth had expressed to the foreign minister that they wanted Norway to rise up and lead the way against Israel, and for the establishment of Palestine, and for them to take the borders back to the 67 borders. And I just shuddered as I looked at that. I'm like, oh my goodness. And then have that light bulb, you know, that night going for the Oslo Accords. And I'm still asking God what that's all about. I mean, but we look at that and we don't think much maybe about it. But when God's dealing with the division of his land, now that's a whole other story. And so as we move into the response coming this next Saturday, not tomorrow, but next Saturday, the land, our land is in, we're on the edge of a cliff. And it's financial, but it's way bigger than financial. Because behind the financial, if that doesn't get solved, there's a military conflict coming. it's just biblical. And I look at that and I'm thinking, God help us, you know, not only that do we need to gather and repent, but it needs to be perpetual. Because if we don't get a grip really fast, I mean, can it be, I believe it can still be safe. I believe our nation can still be safe, or he wouldn't be telling us to gather. You know, there's always that option. But if we don't take it, then we may not want what comes. And so we're going to, I'll pull up the